This is episode 26 of The Living Reminders with Mary and Blake.
What's your favorite book of the Bible? You got a favorite book?
Job.
What's his wife's name?
She isn't named. And she speaks only once. Dost thou still retain thine integrity? Curse God and die.
From Providence, Rhode Island, welcome to The Living Reminders. It's a podcast dedicated to the leftovers on HBO. We're still here and so are you, so let's talk about No Room at the Inn. Suddenly I'm hidden, it's the darkness of the dawn, and your friends are gone, and your friends won't come, so show me where you fit. Up, oh, that's Felicity. Hi, everyone. I'm your host, Mary Larson.
My name's Blake, and I feel really, really, really freaking bad for Matt Jameson.
I know. Felicity, our infant daughter, she feels bad too. You're going to hear her a lot. She feels really bad.
We are bringing her back into the fold this evening. Well, today, actually, because we didn't get a chance to record last night the way that we normally do without our kids. So, as a matter of fact, you may hear our son Godzilla at the same time because he's actually watching How to Train Your Dragon Part 2, as a matter of fact, on Netflix as we're doing this. So we're being really negligent parents as we record. How do you like that?
No, we're not.
My love, what's your Damon rating today?
Okay, my Damon rating for this episode would be a four.
A four?
Yeah, why? I know a lot of people are going to think that's low.
I know, that's a little bit lower than I expected. Why are you giving it a four, real quick?
I don't know. I don't know.
Okay.
You know, I maybe because I felt so sad.
Mm-hmm.
And that means that the show moved me a lot. But nothing blew my mind.
Okay.
So maybe that was it.
All right, I'm going with a 4.5 Damon. And, you know, I feel like I keep giving like 4.5 Damon ratings each episode.
You do. I'm not going to lie. You do.
I know, because it's a very good episode. It was a fantastic one. And I like how it actually called back a lot to two boats and a helicopter in a lot of different ways. And we'll get into that eventually in this episode. But I really, really, really enjoyed it. It was sad. It was frustrating. It was actually funny in some parts. It was, again, a complete episode of The Leftovers. The thing that bothered me a little bit was that I'm so enamored with the Garveys and the Murphys.
Yeah, you missed them.
That I kind of want to just get back to that storyline.
Yeah.
But it's not like I'm Aleppo over here either, watching Matt Jameson. It's really good television, right?
Mm-hmm.
What did some of the listeners think?
Let's see. Well, we had from Curated TV. Curated TV gave it 5 Damons. This episode felt so lost-like to me, especially the opening montage, which had a Hatch-like feel to it.
We have to go back, Kate.
Yes, it did have. You know, remember in season 2 when they opened up, they showed
Desmond
doing the whole thing, make your own kind of music, and mm-hmm. it, riding on the bike and doing the whole process over and over again. I really like that. Clint Church says, I think Matt is imagining Mary speaking to him, so I worry that John's pregnancy explanation is the actual truth. So 4 Damons for Clint Church. Suzanne Marone Carew says 4 Damons for me this time, and that's only because my preferred storyline at this point is what's happening with the Kevin and the Murphys. But this episode delivered high on emotion. It was poignant and painful in so, so many ways. I'm still not 100% convinced that Mary woke up or spoke to Matt in the car, but the caregivers for people with traumatic brain injuries or Alzheimer's or some other kind of chronic condition carry such a tremendous weight physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. The heart wants what the heart wants, and it wouldn't be out of the ordinary for him to have imagined it or even will it to happen. There were plenty of things that point to it having been real, but I'm just not completely convinced, at least not just yet. And props to Matt for standing up to John. I cannot wait for their little talk
dun,
in
dun,
quotations.
Dun.
So, yeah, I think Suzanne and I are in the same, wow.
I think
Suzanne and I are in the same boat here. So I think that, let's figure out that title.
Let's play Figure Out That Title.
All right, my love, looks like we got the title this time, No Room at the Inn. I'm giving it all up to you. What do you got this week?
Christmas time. is here. Happiness and cheer. It's about Christmas. It's about Jesus and his mom, wow. Mary.
Boom. Unable to get into any of the inns, so they have to stay.
She was pregnant.
So they got to stay with goats.
Joseph was like, can anyone please get my wife a room?
I know, right? And I also think that I'm going to add a little bit of commentary to this. It's the first time, I think, all season so far for you. The one commentary I have is that I think there might be a little bit of gender switching here. Yes, there wasn't room for Mary and the baby at, you know, in the house that you know, Matt was trying to have them sit in the rain. And she kept getting turned away. But ultimately, who was turned away? It was Matt Jameson who was turned away.
Mm.
And he turned himself away in a lot of different ways. There was no room at the inn for him. But more importantly, there's no room at the inn for him because he thinks there's no room at the inn for him. So he takes his time and he takes all of the guilt that he associates with himself. And he tries to repent and then puts himself at the end of the episode in that stockade that we all see. So what do you think about the gender switching?
Okay. I'll go with that.
Not bad?
Not too bad.
All right, let's reheat the leftovers.
It's time to reheat the leftovers.
All right, kiddo. What do you got?
Oh, man. There's so much to talk about in this episode.
Well, actually, before we do that, written by Damon Lindelof and Jacqueline Hoyt, directed by... I'm going to go with Nicole Castle.
That's what I would say as well.
Jackie Hoyt, you all know, she is an executive producer on this show, and she has written a lot of different episodes of The Leftovers, including Axis Mundi, Two Boats and a Helicopter. She's also, let's see, I got it right here. She's got Solace for Tired Feet, Two Boats and a Helicopter, No Room at the Inn, and Axis Mundi. So she's got a lot of the heavy hitting episodes of The Leftovers, along with Damon Lindelof. And Nicole Castle, if you don't know her, you probably don't, because she's not that credited as a director all that much, although she does have some episodes as of late. She directed an episode of The Americans, which is one of our favorite television shows, The Killing, A Better Call Saul, which was Alpine Shepherd Boy, for those of you. She's also done The Following and Rectify. And she's an up-and-comer, I imagine. She seems like she's getting a lot of good quality projects as of late.
Sounds good.
Yep. So, okay, let's continue on with the recap.
Okay, so we open with that scene, like you were talking about, that it kind of began kind of like Lost, where it's Matt going about his daily routine with Mary. Now, when I watched this, I didn't think, oh my gosh, he's doing the same exact thing because something special happened. I just thought this was the day in the life of Matt and Mary.
What do you mean?
I just thought that is what happens. He blends her food. He feeds it to her through a G-tube.
Yep.
He eats a microwave meal.
Mm-hmm.
He puts on her makeup. He helps her get ready. They go somewhere. So
okay, I see what you're getting at, and I agree with you. And I'll take it a little step further. It was just, that's their routine.
Yeah.
You know, because, you know, their routine with a special needs person is important, right? And especially when you're trying to live your life, and maybe it's easier for him to keep doing the same things over and over again. But as we find out, it wasn't just because, oh, it's routine. He's just trying to recreate the same exact circumstances of the first day that they went to Miracle.
Yeah.
Because that was the day, obviously, that she woke up, in quotation marks.
And that's, I didn't like that part. I liked seeing that was his life and that was his day. For those of you who don't know, I have a severely handicapped sister who needs constant care. So to me, I saw that and I said, yeah, that's what life is like.
Mm-hmm.
And you care for that person and you talk to that person and you feed that person and you change their diapers. And or for her, he was getting rid of her. What's that bag? The pee bag.
A catheter.
Catheter. You know, all these things. And I just thought it was a point of his dedication and his love.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's how I took it, instead of it being superstitious.
Yeah.
And so I don't know. I mean, I know why it had to be, because he is trying to recreate it. But maybe that's why I didn't give this episode 5 stars, because I loved that for showing love. And instead, it came off like, you're a crazy superstitious person.
It's almost a little selfish, because as he's talking later on, he's like, you showed me for 3 hours,
mm-hmm.
and he's saying this to Mary, you showed me for 3 hours. You can't just take that away from me And what is this, a test? So it's almost selfish in that.
Listen, we have kids. I'm sorry.
Sorry, guys.
If you hear rails on the bus, this is life.
It's almost selfish in that he just wants it for him. You know what I mean? He wants everything for him to go back to normal. And I'm not sure. And here's the real question. And this is the larger question for the entire episode. Is Matt Jameson nuts? Is he insane? And the reason why I ask is because you have the obvious things of Mary potentially getting pregnant and Matt saying that she woke up and all these different things are happening around him. But yet the episode begins with him doing the same exact thing every single time, getting the same exact results every single time, yet he expects a different result. And he chooses to keep doing it. Mm-hmm. He's recording Mary. He's feeding her through the G-tube. It's the same exact meal. He's hoping that he's getting different results. And the textbook cliche thing is, you're insane if you keep doing the same thing expect different results, even though you're getting the same results. Here's the baseline. Is Matt crazy?
What do you think?
I'm asking you, Yahoop.
Oh, no. I'm throwing it right back at you. What do you think?
I don't know if he's crazy. I think he's desperate. And you have seen that throughout the entirety of The Leftovers. And The Leftovers, they want you to like Matt Jameson a lot.
Yes.
And I do. I love how Christopher Eccleston plays him. Like, he can go, he has that giant smile of his. You know, it's all teeth and it's just amazing and lights up and it's wicked bright. But then he has this dark...
The ore whacking.
Yeah,
anger.
The ore whacking, beating people over the head, killing them because they stole his money, kind of anger. And it gets ugly. Matt Jameson is not above getting ugly.
No, he's not.
And he has. So I wonder if this is just their way of saying, you can like him, but you shouldn't. He's not necessarily a trustable narrator. He's not a good narrator for you.
Okay.
Right? Does that make sense?
Maybe.
Awesome. Thank you.
So I'm going to go on a limb, and I think everything that Matt thought happened.
Really?
I do. I think that he and Mary woke up. I think that they had consensual sex.
Do you think they had consensual sex to the Bellamy Brothers, Let Your Love Flow?
Oh, my God.
Can you imagine
maybe.
That? I mean, that was the song that he was playing in the morning, every morning.
Yeah. I think that she spoke to him after he got hit in the head, and she said, we need to go. We need to save him. Reason being is that like guy, when he was waiting to get his bracelet at the new visitor center, the gentleman said pretty much word for word what Mary said about you need to get inside, you need, or else, you know, you're going to lose him.
Mm-hmm.
And for him to be so gender specific, and here's Mary not showing, there's obviously been a lot of psychic like people hanging around Miracle.
Would it be fair to say that there's a lot of psychic energy around Miracle?
Yes. Yes. So because that happened, I was like, oh, man. And I'm going to get a little off track with you guys, but my sister, who is mentally and physically handicapped, she has pretty much the abilities of, like, maybe a one-year-old. There are these things where, like, apps, like smart apps, and we didn't know that she could spell. We didn't know she could do any of this stuff. And last year, someone took one of these smart apps on a tablet, and she was able to spell things and choose things and basically communicate in a way that we didn't ever think was possible. I mean, she like yells and spits and drools and bites herself. I mean, she is severely, severely handicapped. And so maybe that's my own background that, you know, now I see something that I didn't even think was possible in my sister, who I just thought was in a very different mental state. So I'm like hoping like, oh, maybe it can happen to people in TV too. But because that guy said the same things that Mary said, now maybe Matt imagined that guy.
Well, maybe it's possible. I mean, it's definitely possible.
You know?
Because he was hit. He was hit pretty hard in the head. And somebody broke his hand. And the guy stepped on his hand, by the way, and snapped it.
I covered my eyes for
like,
that part.
How awful was that? Like that?
No, I don't know because I covered my eyes.
I can't even imagine that. The trauma that you must go through after that kind of beating with a wrench and then getting stepped on so your hand's broken and you're taken and your wife and you got to carry your wife and it's hot and it's Texas and you're sweating and all that stuff. It's got to play with your mind. And that's why I don't believe in him as a reliable narrator. Because, yes, he envisioned Mary speaking to him. Yeah, we got to get the baby back to him. If he doesn't, if we don't, he's going to die. That, to me, is Matt ascribing meaning to what he feels. Mm-hmm. And then putting that, projecting it on his vision of Mary.
How wild is this? How wild is it that Matt has sex with his wife?
Yep.
Whether consensual or not consensual, that's a whole different topic of conversation. Anyway.
But you're on record saying that she woke up and they had consensual sex.
Yes, but okay. I'm trying to talk in a different chapter right now.
Okay. Right.
How wild is it that for 10 years they tried to get pregnant, mm-hmm. and now here she is in a coma, her body is not healthy, she is older.
Yep.
And the one time they do it, she gets pregnant. Now, for those of you who've tried to get pregnant in the past, some people are really lucky. It's like, oh my God, I stopped wearing condoms and I got pregnant the first day. It generally doesn't happen like that. It's like there's this couple of days in the month that maybe you'll get pregnant if the timing's right, if your bodies are right, if you're happy. I don't even know. But it is such a rare chance. And now to know that they had fertility issues to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
Whoa, talk about a miracle.
Well, again, it plays into the whole No Room at the Inn moniker where...
Yes.
You know...
A miraculous pregnancy.
Correct. You know, Mary, you know, gave...
Was a virgin.
Mary was a virgin. She didn't, you know, she had kid. Well, she had the kid and... I don't know. I don't know.
It's okay if you don't know.
I
it's
really
okay.
don't know. I'd like to think... I would really, 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 really like to think that... that she did wake up and that they did have consensual sex.
Now,
but here's my issue. We've seen Matt hallucinate
yes.
a lot. And Suzanne says it at the beginning of the episode. The heart wants what the heart wants. And when you're already dealing with a level of insanity that you already have, that we've already discussed the baseline here. I mean, the guy's doing Groundhog Day every freaking day. Remember the Bill Murray movie, Groundhog Day?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I Got You, Babe, singing this, in the same song. It's like Bill Murray and Groundhog Day says, I'm God. I am God because I can do anything and there are no repercussions. And Matt Jameson, I feel like, already has this level of insanity and he's that desperate for his wife. He's going to project something on her.
But okay. We're going to do a throwback.
Yep.
Mary seemed to wake up a little bit in the first season.
Yes.
There was that one moment where she like moved a little bit
mm-hmm.
and her hand was
oh
moving.
Yeah, it was very subtle.
Yes.
Yes.
But it was clear that the directors made us see that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what that means. That also gives me hope about Mary.
Yes. And you can also see throughout this episode too that she again has subtle hand movements.
Yes.
Whether they're voluntary or involuntary, I don't know yet.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like she's at least getting more coherent and more lucid in a way, maybe.
Maybe we're just spending more time with her. So maybe this is what Mary does all day and we just haven't seen it because we don't really get to focus on Mary's hands. Who knows?
Yeah.
But, you know, of course, Matt took her for the scan and that was so awkward when one of the hospital people had to come out and be like, hey, we need to actually talk to you.
Mm-hmm.
And then who was that guy that laid down the law and said, you need to sign this document?
Oh,
was giving him
yeah.
a stink eye, basically saying, I think you raped your wife.
Yeah. And he's like, listen, and no, whatever. She didn't. There's no way she could have had consent. So if she didn't have consent, if she didn't have consent for this test, how could she have consent for your pregnancy?
Especially because you said nothing has happened. Her state
correct.
hasn't changed.
Correct.
So had Matt gone in there and said, I am like so sure that she woke up.
Yeah. I wonder if it was just like an advocate, you know, for a patient advocate maybe. Or maybe it was some kind of hospital administrator.
Why didn't Matt tell them?
Tell them that she woke up?
Yes.
Well, he did. Didn't he say that to him in the conversation? That she woke up?
Afterwards.
After. Oh, okay.
Why didn't he tell them when the woman was asking in the beginning, you know, even when the guy was like,
yes.
is this going to hurt? Is she going to feel it? She said, has anything changed? Has her behavior changed at all? And Matt said, no.
Yeah.
Shame on you, Matt, for lying.
I agree. And he kind of gets it a little bit.
He
gets it in the head a little bit. And the fact that Matt does not know if she'll feel the prick of the needle as it goes in, it makes you wonder, because remember when he announced the fact that Mary had indeed woken up to Nora in the previous episode, he said that we talked for hours and I have told her every single thing since the car accident. Mm-hmm. Maybe he kind of does know. Maybe he does know that she won't feel it because he had to tell her everything that happened since then. You know what I mean? And maybe that's just like a little bit of a writing gap or whatever. I don't know, but it would imply at least that he would know. And this is a thing. This conversation that we're having is a smart one because it lends itself to how they're telling the story, right? And we've always joked about ambiguity and what Damon Lindelof does and how he keeps certain things from you. And I think sometimes it's almost a little direct in a lot of ways where he's doing it on purpose. But I think in this case, especially with this season of The Leftovers, the story with Matt Jameson is far more interesting now than if they were to just show you Mary wake up.
Oh, yeah.
It's far more interesting to have some ambiguity whether or not she did or did not wake up, if they did have consensual sex or not. They could easily show you a flashback. They could easily show you that he was right or if he's wrong. But they're not. And they're inciting and inspiring conversation like ours. Like, did she or didn't she?
Well, they also just like to make us uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. Okay? Just like in the first episode when the baby disappeared.
Yep.
Okay? This show is not about making you feel good.
No, they try not to.
This show is making you question, do you think a man pretty much raped his wife?
A comatose wife.
Yeah. Yep. That's a man of God.
That's saying a lot.
That is. And that's why you're supposed to like him, because you're supposed to sit there really, really grasping with it because he's such a good hearted man, supposedly. Mm-hmm. You're supposed to want to believe him.
Yep.
Because if he had dirt on his fingernails, you'd say, you're bad. I mean, he has done some bad things.
He has.
You know what, though? Then precious Matt drives home and he falls for another trick. I knew right from the start. I'm like, don't you get out of your car. Blake tells me this all the time. Don't pick up anybody hitchhiking. Don't get out of your car and help people. Because I've done it. I've helped people. And luckily, I'm not dead or hit over the head.
That's because my favorite joke with Mary is like, hi, I'm Mary. Here's my credit card. And here's my social security number. And here's my license. And here's my card. And here's the mortgage to my house. I love you. And I don't even know who you are. Like, really? That's what you do?
Pretty much. Pretty much.
Yeah.
So Matt, of course, tries to help this guy. Who's got the biggest freaking wrench known to man?
I know. How do you have that?
Who has that in their car?
I was just going to say that.
I was lucky. I had like one day a little screwdriver. My car broke and Blake was like, where's your toolkit? And I pulled out like this mini screwdriver. I think it's to fix watches. I was like, here's my tool.
She's like, I got my tool right here. Like, really?
No, but that was pretty much the clue. Wrench, you know, the one where it's like, oh, was Professor Plum in the library with a wrench? That was so big. Oh, man.
It was the guy in the car with his son and the speeding son of Texas with the wrench.
Crush your hand. And, oh, my God. I just was so uncomfortable. I was actually more nervous that they were going to hurt Mary.
Oh, that's what I thought, too, as a matter of fact.
To get her wristband off.
When he goes to Mary, I'm like, oh, my God, what is he going to do to this poor lady? And it shows you how desperate the people are outside of Miracle to actually get into Miracle.
Yep.
And I like this because they've done it a lot now where they've shown you the outside and how crazy the outside of Miracle can be.
Let me tell you, watching this and then watching The Walking Dead, ooh, I'm just picturing these people doing a massive takeover and no wall is going to protect them.
None, zero, or a bridge.
Let's just jump forward, you know? How crazy is it that that guy gets into an accident because of these goats?
Okay, here's the goat guy again. What are we doing with these goats?
No, but the goat guy wasn't there, and that must have been his herd.
Well, goats were there. We saw dead goats. And again, how many dead goats?
No, I'm saying the guy wasn't there.
Oh, okay, all right. I'm not sure if I saw the guy or not. But yes, that to me screams karma. It's total karma, right? I mean, you can't hurt somebody, take their thing, and then take the wristband and expect to be okay.
The kid was okay, though.
The kid had no scratches. How is it that the dad is dead?
The dad probably wasn't wearing a seatbelt.
Probably not. And then the kid gets out and he's sitting there. And how heartbreaking was that for this kid? And it again, it shows you the kind of man that Matt Jameson is. He, instead of taking the wristband, which you think he was going to do, and I wouldn't blame him if he did do.
I would have too.
I totally would have.
I'm like, that's mine.
But like, kid, beat it. Go on your own. I got things to do.
Who's going to watch this kid now?
I know.
John Murphy, good luck with that.
I know. He's already...
I was ready for Nora to be like, oh, give me your week. You're tired. You're hungry.
Because she's not the Statue of Liberty.
Yes, she is. She took in little baby Lily. That's true. She's going to be taking care of Mary, which we know is a full-time job.
Oh, my God. Well, okay. Let me ask you this.
I was ready for her to take in the boy, too. I like boys.
Is it fair of Matt Jameson to lay this on Nora and Kevin and everything?
Yes.
Why do you think it's fair?
Once again, maybe it's because of my own personal experience, but your family. And when your family marries her family, and Nora's very careful about her family. Nora has a big heart. Nora has learned before how to care for Mary. You could see it again when she was like putting on her lipstick, like helping her. That's just to reaffirm with you. Nora's done this before. This is not Nora's first time at the Mary Rodeo. Like, she knows how to take care of vegetative state Mary.
Okay.
And in my opinion, like, if my parents were to pass away before my sister, we're taking care of her.
Gotcha.
So I just think it's a family thing. And it's something probably Nora's always thought about, is that if something happened to Matt, she would be there for Mary.
Yep. I got you. And it's tough.
It is tough. It's not easy. Poor Kevin. Kevin's going to be like, what are we doing? I just wanted to buy a little cheap house, man. Oh my goodness. So there's a lot of stuff going on.
Yeah.
Matt goes to the camp. You know, and he finds Samurai Bun Guy. Love that he calls him that.
Did you see the man with the samurai bun?
I would have just called him Man Bun. But Matt doesn't know that this is a trend.
I say fuck too.
He says Samurai Bun. How precious. And Samurai Bun Guy, you know, says he can get him in. And Matt then has to go through this really awkward thing with the woman with the cross.
That's correct.
That was so awkward.
Well, that was a little bit later on in the episode. Because he eventually does run into Samurai Bun Guy, and he crosses the bridge over to Miracle, and he has to go through the whole ordeal of trying to get the park rangers to give them the new wristbands. And he's saying, well, I was given sanctuary by the priest. I was given these wristbands, and what are we doing here, right? And please, I live here. And I love how he pled with the park ranger at the gate. He's like, I live here. I go to the pool on Sundays. I do this. I do that. Trust me, I live here.
At first, I was like, where the hell is this reverend? And then I remembered he was having hip surgery.
Yeah, correct. And here's the other thing, too. You can't just call the guy because...
Why not?
Because Matt dropped his phone in his own piss.
Borrow someone else's phone.
By the way, would you go and... Like, would you grab the phone out of your pee?
I want to know who was calling him. Can someone screenshot that?
Oh, that's a good one.
I really was upset because I'm like, who's calling you? It's someone very important. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's, you know, I don't know. Maybe it's Lori Garvey.
That's possible. But yeah, they go through the whole thing. And what did you think about, you see, again, Matt has this anger. Because when he finally does get into the park, and when he finally does get to the line where he's trying to figure out, if he can get his own wristbands, he's calling Nora, talking to her, please, I got to let you know. And then the guy behind him in the wedding party
kept busting his balls. Oh, my God, Bridezilla.
Oh, my God. It was the guy, and we could basically call him Bride. Why don't we call him Bridezilla from now on?
That's it.
Bridezilla, dude. First of all, what's up his ass so much?
The fact that he had to wear teal bow tie. That is so not his color.
We all know that's Mary's color.
That's right.
Teal is Mary's power color. But again, Matt has this anger, and you see this anger with Bridezilla, right? Because he's like, oh yeah, you got your paperwork? Well, let's see it. And they get into a fight. And it's so bad that he has to get bound and zip-tied his hands together, even though he's got a broken hand. This guy's got a broken freaking hand. And he's fighting Bridezilla.
Matt's got super strength.
He has got like God strength or something because he's
like the Hulk.
Yeah, he's getting involved with these things, and that's why I can't he's not a reliable narrator. It's too hard to trust him because his anger and his anguish and his happiness, it's such a roller coaster with him, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then we get into the whole thing with John and Kevin when Kevin shows up and John is there and John is willing to help Matt Jameson because Kevin has not lived there for over 6 months, which to me is a little bit of bullshit because they say, oh, well, if they haven't lived here for 6 months, there's nothing I can do for you. Well, they own a goddamn house. I'm sure that it's registered in the town, right?
Yeah, but they just had to, you know, this is their way to move the story forward.
Oh, yeah, no, I mean, I know, but I feel like that's kind of shitty of the town and.
That was Felicity reprimanding you for swearing.
Oh, sorry, yeah. So, and then again, Matt, he just doesn't know when to stop talking, right? Because John says to him, oh, are you going to tell me that she woke up and you had sex with her and they had this baby? It's a miracle.
I loved looking at, I'm going to call him Justin, but Kevin, the entire time during that conversation,
he's like,
his eyes were like, all right, man. All right. Oh, right, man. Shut your mouth. Shut your mouth. Stop. Change your mind. All right. Now you're lying. Okay. Oh, why'd you open your mouth again? Stop. Oh, damn.
He's like, what the fuck was that?
Yeah. I just loved watching his eyes.
And I love John Murphy in this one, too. Kevin Carroll nailed this scene, in my opinion, because he was threatening Matt without threatening Matt. Right? It was...
This guy's the sheriff. I don't even get it. I'm so excited to see how he got into so much power and how he feels like he has to lay down the law.
We're definitely in need of a John Murphy episode coming up soon. Because, again, the Leftovers, has learned from their previous season where they realize the best and most widely acclaimed episodes last season were the individual episodes. It was the Nora episode, right? It was the flashback episode. It was the Matt Jameson episode. It was singularly focused on pretty much one character or two characters. And they've done that again now, which for almost every episode, and it has worked to a T. So I wonder if they'll do it again for John Murphy, hopefully soon, because we deserve that story, right? I mean, we deserve to 100%. Hear what, we deserve to hear what he says. And again, I how Kevin Carroll played it by threatening him and then not threatening him was awesome.
And he hit the nail on the head that we all want to know. When Matt asked him, what happened to you?
Right.
What happened to you? You weren't always like this.
And he's like, yeah, I get it. Your daughter is missing and I can appreciate that. But you were like this before your daughter went missing.
Yeah, like, what happened to you, man?
And Matt just won't shut the hell up. He just won't. Maybe he can't help himself. Maybe it's his path of going down. Maybe he can't help but make the same mistakes over and over and over again. And because maybe he's subconsciously like Job. You know, we played this clip at the beginning of the episode where he's saying, oh, my favorite book was Job. And his wife said the thing about keeping your integrity. Maybe Matt can't help but do those things over and over again because he himself is a lot like Job. He keeps testing himself. And that's why he likes it so much.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, we have John Murphy saying, well, listen, I don't think I'm going to be able to get you those wristbands after all. And then now Matt is thrust back out into the Miracle Game of Thrones style community over
looking
here.
Looking for Elmer.
Elmer, not Elmer.
Samurai bun.
Blonde hair, German Swiss dude, whatever, you know. Like, what are we doing? And that is when we finally run into...
Crosswoman,
who, by the way, if you don't know, if you're not a fan of 90s television, was Brett Butler. Do you know who Brett Butler is?
No.
Remember the show Grace Under Fire?
No.
You don't remember her?
This was 90s. I didn't really get to watch TV when I was a kid.
Oh my God. Brett Butler, she looks like 1,000 miles of bad road right now. But she, at one point, was Grace Under Fire, an extremely popular television show.
Sorry. I got to watch, you know, like Reading Rainbow.
TGIF.
TGIF, totally. Urkel. If she wasn't on TGIF, I didn't know who she was. Suzanne Summers, I know who she is.
So what do you make of this whole scene with Brett Butler and whack this guy, Jerry, or whatever the heck his name was, And not only whack him so hard with an oar, but you have to say the name Brian as well.
I wondered if that is what happened on the day of the departure to that gentleman.
What
if
do you
he
mean?
Was whacked by a man of God with an oar while someone was yelling Brian. Like, I wonder if that guy's name was Brian.
Uh-huh.
And if someone like a priest or something whacked him
and
they were
Brian.
Trying to recreate it, just like how Matt's been trying to recreate the, you know, the waking up of Mary.
Okay.
So I wonder if this is just another superstition thing. This happened before. Let's have him do it again.
Sure. But I don't know why they would want to recreate the departure, right? Because, I mean, what did they want to depart?
Maybe. You know, not everyone thinks the departure happening was a bad thing.
Sure.
Some people do think people went to heaven or moved on or something.
Or maybe they just think that life is so bad outside of miracle.
Well, outside that fence, it sure is.
And by the way, I love how they're fleshing this community outside of miracle out. Like, they're really giving it a life.
I would not go there.
I mean, you saw the lady with the heel, the red heels, walking on top of the guy's backs and everything.
Yeah.
And you also see the guy with his loved one outside of the trailer. Oh, my God. That was like freaky. I'm looking. I'm like, oh.
Kind of reminded me of all those people who are waiting on top of the buildings in Independence Day who want to be taken by the aliens. Like crazies. Crazies unite.
Welcome. And then the big blue laser shoots down on them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Best mashup ever.
Thank you.
But yeah, they're really exploring this community outside, and they're showing like how people are trying to run over the bridge, and hey, we got runners, and getting tased, and it's really a desperate community of people out there who are just trying anything to get inside this town. And there's almost like this own law, like its own like community, its own like social act with each other that pretty much anything goes.
Yeah,
out
like,
there.
Like the repent guy, for like example.
This guy out there sitting in a stockade, naked, by the way, for what?
Like for, Quasimodo, for, getting food thrown at him. Exactly, for what? And why does this woman get to say, you need to take his place?
Correct, and she says, and Matt asks, why is he up there? And the lady says, why not? I mean, that to me is something. Because, well, yes, why not? What did he do to deserve this?
It's a wild, wild west, man. Wicked wild, wild. Wicked wild, wild.
So do you think the whole Brian thing is going to end up being important?
No.
No, I don't either. And again, with the way Lindelof writes is, yes, it's there. It's there to show you how something is messed up and the community is the way that it is. But it's not necessarily important why it is. You just have to accept the fact that it is, in fact, important.
You just kind of know it's a little left up.
Yeah,
that's
right?
That's what I think, yeah.
Right?
Oh, God. You know what killed me?
What?
So, of course, he gets the money, goes to see Elmer Fudd, Samurai.
Elmer Samurai Fudd.
Yeah. And he puts him in a storm drain, and then it floods.
Oh.
Floods.
An act of God. That's the way that it seemed.
I was like, it's freaking Noah.
Right? Noah.
You're being flushed out.
Mm-hmm. It's flushing.
I thought Mary was going to die.
Oh, I thought that was close, too. I really did. I really did. And you know, this idea of the flood that you're talking about, it makes sense because, you know, soon after they have the flood and they get spit back out into the retaining pond.
Well, Nora just talked about the flood last week.
Correct. Exactly. Right. So you have the flood happening last week and you have Mary and Matt getting into this little tube, this runoff tube, which, by the way, Nicole Castle, excellent job directing. She just stayed right in that one spot, and you had the lamp with all the light refracting around the tube, and then all you hear is just Matt trying to open the gate, which, by the way, must have been really freaking hard, because Ilya had one hand.
He was like, ugh, what did he say about the clippers, like that they were dull or something? $1,000 for wire cutters.
Dude's got a broken hand. How are you? Try to figure that out yourself.
Well, that's why he didn't get to open it.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Well, even if he could have. Good luck.
Doesn't matter.
Why didn't he just wait? He knew it was raining. Why didn't he say, oh, okay, it's through the storm drain.
Because,
I'm just going to
wait. Again, he's not a reliable narrator. He's just doing, he's doing whatever he feels like he's doing.
You know, he needs to because he thinks there's like a timetable about the baby dying.
That's true. That's a valid point. I would agree. But again, he's making poor choices. He makes poor choices throughout, not only this episode, but in the previous episode, Two Boats and a Helicopter. He just consistently makes bad choices, and he has to pay for them each time. It's bad. And here's my ultimate point about the whole flood thing. Nora brings up the idea of the flood. Matt gets flooded out, quite literally, out of Miracle. And we all know that the flood with Noah was meant to clear out all of the bad people on the earth at that time. It was a reset button. It was something that God used to say, okay, everybody here, we've gone awry. we've made a bad decision here. So I'm gonna send this flood, and you're all just gonna go away. So it was the reset button, and I feel like Matt, after the flood, had a little bit of a reset button. He had a little bit of like a come to Jesus moment. I mean, pun intended here, where he realized, okay, I can get my wife in here, but there are things that I'm doing that I need to pay for, right? Okay. It felt like he was just doing things and making poor choices. I mean, he breaks down in anger. He gets into a fight with a guy. He breaks an oar over this guy's back for $500. He did things here and there, and he wanted to make sure that his unborn child was taken care of, and he meets the clairvoyant man. He takes his advice, and would this baby die if he couldn't get him back into Miracle? In the end, he makes all these bad choices, and he has to live with them. And again, I compared Matt to Job in a lot of different ways, and that's a very easy comparison. But one thing that I knew about Job from my Catholic school days,
oh, look at you,
is Job says, "Naked I came from my mother's womb, and naked shall I return." And perhaps that's the reason why Matt returns to the refugee camp at the end of the episode. You mm-hmm. know, he goes back and he has to repent. He realizes that he's made poor choices, that he's been tested like Job, and he's failed each time. But now he has a choice to go and repent for what he has done. And the only thing that will save him is God. The only thing that will save him is Mary waking up, an act of God, potentially. And like Job being rescued by God, he would be too. And ultimately, that's what I think is happening. And that's why he returns. I mean, does that make sense to you, do you think?
Yeah, totally does.
I think so, too.
So we got through all that. We got through the John Murphy. Mm-hmm. Now Kevin and Nora, once again, Nora's an awesome family member.
Oh, how she just rescues
makes
him.
Makes a fake phone call, rescues him, finds him, throws him and Mary in the back of the trunk, and is going to take care of Mary.
I know. Oh my God, I love that. And one of the things that I really liked about this scene too is when they're in the trunk of the car, right? And Matt is speaking to Mary, finally, in a loving manner. Not in the manner that he was speaking to her when he's like, "You're testing me, look at me," grabbing her face, looking at him. He's not desperate anymore.
But didn't you almost think she was going to wake up for a second while no one else could see?
A little bit. And I really want her to. I want her to so bad. I just want... Because Janelle Maloney, the girl who plays Mary, is fantastic. If you've ever watched The West Wing, she is great. She's actually made an appearance, too, on The Blacklist, which is not a show that I would recommend. But she did, in fact, make an appearance, and she was good on that, too. But here's the thing. Matt shares a poem with Mary, and it's from William Butler Yeats, and it's actually, the poem is from is titled "The Song of Wandering Angus," which is an Irish, poem, and the Angus of the title was a god of Irish mythology, one who stayed forever young and lived in a most marvelous place where no one ever died, where food and drink were always plentiful. So it makes you wonder: is Miracle a place where no one ever dies? Right? we've already talked about this whole notion with like the cricket and the bird and all that other stuff. But and I got this from a website here. It says, but unlike the Angus of the legend, Yeats's protagonist is at poem's end not united with his beloved, because the poem is about a guy, Angus, looking for his love life. Also, unlike Angus, he has grown old. Therefore, his expressions of optimism in the final verse, I will find out where she has gone and kiss her lips and take her hands, may allude to the afterlife, as this in life he has grown old with fruitless searching. Unlike the eternally young Angus, Yeats's protagonist is affected by the passing of time. The bittersweet ending implies that he now awaits death, but trusts that in the afterlife he will find the love he has only glimpsed briefly. So what the hero ultimately seeks, Angus ultimately seeks, is elusive, and there is no logical reason to believe he will ever find it. But he continues to have faith, and that this faith gives his life meaning. I can't. You can't describe Matt Jameson anymore, mm-hmm. any more succinctly than that. And what he says, and what the thing that he recites to Mary is, though I am old with wandering through hollow lands and hilly lands, I will find out where she has gone, and I kiss her lips and take her hands, and walk among the dappled grass, and pluck till time and times are done, the silver apples of the moon, the golden apples of the sun. Which, again, William Butler Yeats has been used before on The Leftovers. It's a great callback to Patty, when the poem she describes about the end and the end of all being in the cabin at Cairo right before she kills herself, she recites it William Butler Yeats.
God, some really smart people write this show.
I know.
I would be able to write this.
I know.
And to know, oh yeah, we've wrote about Yeats before.
I know.
Gosh, these people are so smart.
And then the obviously the story concludes with Matt and bringing the little boy that he discovers up on the road. John's driving, and John sees him, and Matt says, listen, I'm not going to lie anymore. What happened, happened, and she's going to wake again, and I don't even want your damn bracelet, but when she comes back to life, when Mary comes back, we're going to have a talk. And I don't see this ending up well for either of them.
No.
I really don't see this ending up well for either of them. It's going to be crazy. And then the song that plays is one of Mary's favorite artists of all time. My love, who was it?
Regina Spektor. I have loved Regina. Gosh, before I even met you, Blake, I loved her. And she's just so amazing. And this is one of my favorite songs by her.
And the title of the song is called Laughing With. It's by Regina Spektor. And one of the verses I wanted to highlight here, one of the verses says, she says, God can be funny when he told you he'll give you money if you just pray the right way. And when presented like a genie who does magic like Houdini, or grants wishes like Jiminy Cricket and Santa Claus, God can be so hilarious. No one's laughing at God. We're all laughing with God. I mean, what is your take on that? It's almost saying like, it's almost a farce.
I don't know. I think it can mean different things to different people.
Mm-hmm.
I think every time I've heard it, I've thought different things.
Yep.
You know, because if you, I don't know, you know, I saw some people say like, why does God do sad things? Why does God let me know from a police officer that my daughter died? Mm-hmm. Why did these bad things happen? Why did God do this? And yet, if God is everywhere and everything, then God is doing all of the funny and lighthearted things, like a funny little joke at a cocktail party. If God is everywhere, that was God too. And God can be funny and God can be light. So that's sometimes how I take it. And other times, yeah, I take it in the opposite way that nothing. Well, yeah, there's nothing.
And we're all laughing at God. We're all laughing with God. Like, we're almost on the same level as God, oddly enough. And I like where they're taking the story between John and Matt. I like that there's going to be a conflict there. And here's the underlying conflict. What's going to happen when the palm print comes back as Kevin? Right,
because they showed that. They showed that in the previously.
Right, so it's coming back.
They keep showing that palm print, John Murphy's palm print, but they keep showing it to you. They're reminding you, just so you know,
yep.
Isaac does read palm prints.
And it's coming back, and it's going to set up a major conflict between, I think, all three of them in a lot of different ways. So I don't know. He has a lot to say about this.
Once again, if you're a new listener, we have a 5-month-old daughter.
I know.
And she makes appearances like this.
What I really like, and I think people are going to be a little funny about this, is that there's this idea, again, of science and faith. And this is a huge Damon Lindelof trope of questioning whether or not God is real. Whether or not you believe in God or whatever, there's at least an argument to be made either way. And it's worth exploring. And I think in Lost, he very much said, spoiler alert, that faith wins out at the end. But again, I always think that John is the man of science. He's the Jack Shepherd, and that Matt is certainly John Locke, man of faith. Things happen for a reason. It's been a thing. There are reasons for all the things that are happening.
We have to go back, Kate.
So that is my Lost comparison for today.
Good.
I think that's it. Oh, you know what I noticed too? As Matt and Mary were walking back into Jarden, they pass a sign that says Jarden 5 miles away. There's a little blue ribbon on there.
Yep.
For all of the people. All of the departed. I thought that was really, really excellent. Well, my love, I think it is now time for the Brian David's Thought of the Week. Are you ready?
Yes.
Okay, let's do it.
Mary and Blake, it's Why Won't He Say It? David's from the Film Schlubs podcast. I enjoy the many parallels to Two Boats and a Helicopter, including the most blatant example when Matt stopped to help a father and son who were having car trouble just a few miles outside of Miracle. Flashback to episode 103, Matt, who was on the verge of losing his church before his miraculous run at the roulette table, stopped to help a couple Mapleton GR members who were being pelted with rocks. This led to Matt getting knocked unconscious by a flying rock, as well as the loss of his church to its new owners, the Guilty Remnant. In this episode, he was again knocked unconscious by the same person he was trying to help, which cost him his religious exemption wristbands, as well as the church he was currently assisting. More on this in a moment. One of the big questions we've been presented in this episode, as well as this season, is whether Matt's losing his mind or not. Much like Kevin, John, and Lori to varying degrees. However, we keep seeing more and more signs within Miracle that it has special people or miracle workers in it, at the very least, whether it's Virgil, Isaac, or the man at the visitor center who conveyed the same message that Mary did to Matt when he was on the ground unconscious after being attacked for his wristband. So why is Matt repenting his sins at the end of this episode? Is it for taking back his stolen wristband from the dead father, or is it out of fear that he impregnated Mary while she was still in a vegetative state? I think it's none of those things. I think he's repenting the fact that he let John coerce him into lying and going against his own faith, even for a brief period of time, so he could get a new wristband. As a man of faith, Matt is supposed to spread the word of God, especially when it comes in the form of a real-life miracle, such as Mary waking up. When we look back at the season 2 premiere, we acknowledge the interaction between Matt and John, but we should have realized then that they were on a collision course. And while Kevin is certainly going to be involved in the season's outcome, given his presence at the scene of Evie's supposed disappearance, I think John and Matt will have the true man of science, man of faith, or believer-non-believer battle to end this season. Matt has never looked as confident as when he told John that he could keep his wristband and that they were going to have a talk when Mary woke up again. But why did Matt feel so confident that he challenged John with the truth that Mary woke up? Well, he just witnessed a car accident involving goats and the man who stole his wristbands. Matt wanted a sign from above, and he most certainly got one, if not several in this episode, such as Mary's pregnancy. Like last year, through all his misfortune, Matt's faith has become even stronger as he devotes himself to a new purpose. Last year, it was trying to help the GR. Now he seems determined to help the encampment folk. As Matt was exiting the gate to see the doctor, he watched as a few encampment folks storm the bridge to Miracle. I think Matt's ultimate goal with the Repent Act is to inspire those people, to help them, and eventually rally behind them as they reclaim Miracle from John and whomever he's beholden to. I mentioned earlier that Matt was assisting at the church in the town, but if you watch his day-to-day efforts, he was barely doing anything. He sat there without much purpose. The encampment is where he can truly make a difference. Many of those people need him, not these spared churchgoers in Miracle. Again, if Matt can inspire others, he can be the driving force behind the reclamation of Miracle from John and his tyrannical ways. Besides his own admission that the book of Job was his favorite book, there are many comparisons between Job and Matt in this episode, including Matt's own factoid that Job's wife spoke only once. What if Mary woke up just once to make sure that Matt was on this course to reclaiming Miracle with all those people that were denied its gift? On a side note, following the car accident in town which killed the father who stole Matt and Mary's wristbands, the visual of the father's young son in the forest reminded me so much of Lost, especially a young Jacob. Cue the soundbite, Blake.
We have to go back, Kate.
And thanks to this episode, I can now recognize the hairstyle that warrants the term samurai bun. I have another parallel from Two Boats and a Helicopter that may foreshadow what's to come, especially now that Matt has cemented himself as one of John's many opponents. While Matt was unconscious in a hospital bed following the rock incident in episode 103, he had a series of dreams, including one where he was holding a young Nora's hand as they watched their childhood home go up in flames with their parents inside. This actually happened to them as he was reliving all of his terrible moments in his life, such as his leukemia diagnosis and the car accident with Mary on the day of the sudden departure. A young Nora asked, "Are they burning in there? Why isn't anybody doing anything?" Nora was referring to her parents and the firefighters that were standing around doing nothing to stop the fire. This clearly resembles the scene in the premiere where John and company started the fire at Isaac's house, which also happened to be Nora's original rental, and clearly did nothing to stop the fire. Is Matt Jameson's declaration of faith against a quote-unquote non-believer like John going to result in John burning down Nora's house next door? Will Matt and Nora relive this tragedy from their youth all over again due to Matt's belief in miracles, and his rallying of the encampment people to reclaim Miracle from John? Also, I was quite moved by Matt's overall attempt to get through to John like any true man of God would. He asked, "What happened to you? You're angry at this place." And he again asked, "What happened to you?" I still believe that Virgil, or Virgil's gift, is the foundation of John's contempt for this town, and the reason why he won't let the many other gifted people in town practice openly. Virgil's gift must have cost John something near and dear to him, perhaps Erica's hearing? And then the events resulted in John's failed attempt to murder Virgil. This would explain why he was so determined to stop more of these everyday miracle workers upon his release from prison. No matter what happens, I'm convinced that John will become an open believer by season's end. Matt will play a part in making sure that this happens. The question is, will John be dying during that admission? You can find more of me, Brian Davids, on Twitter at BDF331, as well as the Film Schlubs podcast. As always, thank you to Mary and Blake, as well as you, the audience, for listening.
Brian, thank you as always for chiming in. We love everything that you have to say. You can also, as Brian probably mentioned, that you can find him on the Living Reminders blog. I think it's time for the sudden theory of the week. You ready?
Yes.
My love, you got anything?
I think I always lay it all out. Like, I think everything happened.
All right. My sudden theory of the week, Mary will wake up. She will wake up this season.
Who's she going to wake up to?
I don't know.
And what's Patty got to say about her?
Boom.
That's all I want to know.
There is a lot of psychic energy in Miracle. It's happening.
You know, it'd be cool if like something goes down, like if Kevin sleepwalks or does something naughty, or if the Murphys do something naughty in front of Mary, thinking, oh, whatever, she's like a vegetable. Like, it's okay, we can do it. And then she wakes up.
Correct.
And she knows, and she did remember that.
And here's the thing. And this isn't necessarily story analysis. This is just character analysis and how things are written. We have now Matt Jameson in the stockade, and he says the only way he's coming back into Miracle is if Mary wakes up. Now, when you don't have a character, when a common way to stop characters from progressing is to literally cage them, like what they did in Lost. They put, spoiler alert, they put Kate and Sawyer in cages in season 3.
So you said you were done with Lost for today.
We have to go back, Kate.
Sorry, it's my last one.
Ugh.
They literally put them in cages. And there's probably not enough story for Matt Jameson or for Christopher Eccleston in this season. So what do? We put him in a stockade, and he'll stay there until we figure out what to do with him. So, but Eccleston is too good of an actor, and the story behind Matt Jameson is too fruitful. It has too many things going for it. So they need to get him back. They need to get him back into the fold of the story. And how do they do that? Mary will wake up.
Or die.
It's possible. It's definitely a possibility in how they're going to get... I don't know. She could die, but I would hate to see Janelle Maloney wasted like that. She's already done a fantastic job as Mary, and she's done everything that she could. Like, just sitting there and just having that blank face and nothing. Uh-huh. Right. Even Felicity is impressed. She is great. So to get her back into the fold, I feel like they're going to need her to either die or come back to life. And I think that's how they're going to get Eccleston back into this story.
Please hang up and try again.
Well, I've got two final thoughts for this evening. The first is, it's another excellent run and another excellent episode in a continually great season of The Leftovers. They are firing in all cylinders. And I know that I was saying I've seen this before, and I wasn't totally blown away by this episode, because we noticed a lot of these same things in Two Boats and a Helicopter. But regardless of whatever that is, this is still much, much better than most television out there. I mean, I would say it's 98% better than most television out there, including a lot of premium cable network television shows. And trust me, we watch, like you guys, a lot of television. So to say that, I think it's pretty high praise. But the second point that I want to make is going off of seeing this on Two Boats in a Helicopter beforehand. And you know what? That's not false. It's actually really true. We see a lot of the same things in this episode that we did in Two Boats in a Helicopter. There's like a lot of different parallels that are there. I mean, you know, I would say that in both episodes, you know, of course, under, you know, different premises, you know, Matt gets into fights and altercations, you know, and he gets head injuries multiple times. He needs to raise money, and he gambles, or he gambles pretty much both times. He gambles at the casino, and then he gambles with Elmer, the samurai bun guy dude. He tries and tries and tries to solve his problems, and he's always trying to take the easy road in each episode. He tries to find an easy solution for himself to make his life better. And each time he's victimized, he's given a bad rap. I mean, he's just given a bad set of circumstances each time. So, again, I wonder if this is making him a bad narrator. Not a bad narrator, but an unreliable narrator. And I've said that a couple of times this podcast, but it's true. When you keep doing the same things over and over again, and you expect different results, but you're not getting them, there's that level of insanity again that I question. And more importantly, one thing I wanted to highlight is the last episode, Two Boats and a Helicopter, he had a vision of making love to his wife, Mary, after he gets hit in the head. So is this his just in his inner nature? Is this something that he wants so desperately? Possibly, yeah. I could totally agree with that. I could totally see that. But now that's proof that he wants it and has visualized it before. What's to say that this time he isn't as desperate this time? And he didn't visualize it again. Maybe this time he didn't visualize it in just a dream. Maybe it was a lucid dream. Maybe he thought that she was in fact awake. And I'm going to end up saying that I don't think that she woke up. I don't think that she did, but I think he thought she did. And ultimately, that's how it all went down. Of course, I'd like to believe that she did. I'd like to believe that everything is okay, but I'm not quite sure yet. Although, I will say, the show, again, has never given us a reason to not believe it. The show has never given us a reason to say, you're lying to us. So perhaps she did wake up. I don't know. It's a big question. I love this show. Anyway, let's close out the show.
Let's keep this conversation going. As you might know, we actually have a second episode now each week for listener feedback, and we get that listener feedback through Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram. You can find us, Living Reminder. So tell us what you think.
Or if the social media isn't enough for you, you can always get us at livingreminders@gmail.com.
Head on over to thelivingreminders.com. It's our website. You can see all sorts of cool things there. Our blog, previous episodes, and you can actually leave even longer messages for us there than the 140 character limit that Twitter gives you.
We would love if you did that. You can find all the great interviews that we've done. Please go to the website. And while you're at the website, there's also this little button at the top right-hand corner of the page that says support. And there's a way that you can support The Living Reminders in keeping it a free podcast. One of them is Patreon by donating $1 or $2 or $125 billion a month. We would be glad to accept any donation that you'd be willing to give. But the most important thing you can do for a free podcast is to tell a friend. Tell a friend based on what you like about the show, The Leftovers, but not only that, this podcast. If we give you enough value and we provide a good companion to The Leftovers, we would love for you to tell one of your friends that we exist.
Head on over to iTunes, please, and leave us a rating or a review. The reviews are especially even more awesome because you have to take the time to write about our show. This month, the month of November, I charge you, our listeners. Let's get up to 70 readings and reviews. Right now we have 59. So let's get onto iTunes and leave The Living Reminders a rating or a review. Thanks.
That'd be great. And the final thing, the last but certainly not least thing you need to do is to go to thelivingreminders.com and check out The Living Reminders blog. Just go to the top right-hand corner, hit the tab that says blog, and you'll be able to see all of the great articles and all the great theories and ideas and everything that's there is just really cool for the show. So please go to the Living Reminders blog and check out all the hard work that the writers have done there.
Until next time, ladies and gents, I'm Mary Larson.
My name's Blake.
And we're still here.